Well, once a month, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe for us goes all over the world looking for stories of high strangeness, and she's back with some of them, so we'll check in with her in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Linda Moulton Howe has devoted her career, film, television, radio, to productions concerning science, medicine, the environment, and other stories of high strangeness. She's an Emmy Award winner, and here she is back on Coast to Coast. Geez, these months go by fast, Linda. How are you?
I agree. Well, I'm packing and getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. Sunday for the citizen hearing, which is upcoming. It'll be all next week, Monday through Friday. And I know that there have been efforts trying to leverage Congress and leverage the government. But there is something about this time of what seems so much planetary agitation, so many things happening in the skies, and we all know how many leaks there are.
Many. Yeah.
And that people who have served in military and in science and in medicine and in engineering who have leaked to somebody like me, a reporter, about knowledge that we're not alone in the universe, never have been, that there are other intelligences that know how to move point to point in space and get here and have been, from what I understand, there is knowledge inside our government that we're dealing with something that has been interacting and terraforming this planet for centuries, maybe thousands and thousands of years. And it just seems that Steve Bassett, who has worked so hard on this citizenhearing.org foundation and this effort, that when he said that what he's hoping that we're going to be able to accomplish this time around in Washington, there's about 36 of us, I'll be doing panels and doing a presentation along with others, is that what he would like to see happen is that what the U.S. Congress has failed to do for at least a half a century, maybe more, is we will be there trying to present facts surrounding what Steve Bassett and the citizen hearing calls, quote, the most important issue of this or any other time, close quote.
Well, you're doing what Congress should have been doing a long time ago.
It's true, and what is amazing to me is that now that we're heading into almost the middle of the 21st century, that this old policy of denial from World War II should still be in effect about something. George, don't you feel that the whole human family deserves the truth about the universe and other life in it when there is a small elite group of humans who cling on to the secret of that information?
Absolutely. Stephen Greer thinks, Linda, that one of the main reasons we're not being told is because that would lead into our questioning free energy sources and things like that. And I think he's onto something there. I also think governments are afraid that they will lose control of people. You know, if we truly understand and believe that there are others like us out there in the universe on other planetary systems, and I'm sure they believe in a godlike factor as well, but I think governments will say, we can't control these people. I mean, they will think of themselves as universal people instead of just, you know, controlled by us. We're going to lose them. And I think those factors are probably the main reasons.
Well,
they're not telling us.
Yeah, and I think that there is a third big component. We have had a concocted human history, concocted, controlled, and the concoction is across the board from religion to we'll call it social mythology, that in some cases might not be mythology at all, but might be about the non-humans interacting with this planet, and that governments are afraid that if they tell the truth, that it will have a negative impact, let's say, on religion. And my argument is, no, I think that humans in general would feel a sigh of relief if all the governments of this planet told the truth about something as fundamental as whether or not other life forms interact with our planet. And that if it is presented by governments in the context, we have taken a long time to try to understand who these entities are, what they want, and now we can stand in front of you and say we're not alone, that there have been interactions past, present, and future. It's allergies. There's mulberry, juniper, so cough or sneeze, just bear with me.
That got you last month, too, didn't it?
Oh, it's been terrible. It's one of the worst springs since I've been here, and everybody's going through it. But that if this were presented as compassion to the public, that the policies of denial were there to try to help people from being afraid, and now there's nothing really to be afraid of but the excitement of learning we're not alone and that we need to understand what the interactions are. I, for one, feel that that would be exciting information, and I don't think the vast majority of people I know would feel panicked. Do you?
No, I don't. Definitely this audience would not be panicked. I think most of them would say, I knew it. Something like that.
For everybody listening to us tonight on Coast and my Earth Files news viewers, I would like to reinforce that the citizen hearing this time is going to be from the National Press Club, and it's going to be in live stream, and they're going to have continuous updates in the citizen hearing Facebook and Twitter, and that all you have to do to remain involved is go to www.citizenhearing.org. And next month, I will try to give you any insight and updates that I learn in this Washington experience. But George, people also deserve the truth on high strangeness and a lot of mysteries around us now. And one of those is the boom phenomenon.
Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable, Linda, isn't it?
And you know, and I know, and others that are paying some attention, that the boom reports are coming at us. For me, I'm getting boom reports now almost every day, if not every other day. And I have put together just a short list of what emails, the source, the towns that have come to me just in the last week. And I'll go through this very fast to give people an idea of how widespread this is. And then I'm going to share with you one of the most interesting communications I've had on this whole boom phenomena since 2011.
Okay,
here are some of the places in the last week. Imperial Beach in San Diego, California, Indianapolis, Indiana, Bella Vista, Arkansas, Bowling Green, Kentucky, Sanger, Texas, Wichita, Kansas, Monroe, Wisconsin, Foster, Rhode Island, Fort Polk, Louisiana. And I also received an email recently about a boom impact in Queensland, Australia, around the first of the year, and it is worth sharing this. This man writes, I heard this extremely loud sound, this is down in Queensland, Australia, like a metal table had been scraped along the ground. Remember all of these reports that I have done with interviews of people saying it sounded like metal trains crashed,
mm-hmm.
or metal fell on their front yard. Metal. This is a metal sound. And he said, it was extremely loud. It made me jump up to go out and see what had happened. And as I did so, one of my glass panels of my pool fence shattered right where the sound came from. The glass company that came to replace it said that they have never heard of glass making a metallic noise before breaking on its own, because he watched this, George. He saw the glass at his pool break. And he said, this is the strangest thing I've ever heard, and it really set my heart racing. Well, these are the kinds of emails that come from people everywhere. And what happened recently? I got an email, and the man explained that he's retired communications and electronics expert, and he had worked for several contractors that had done work for Hill Air Force Base in Utah and other military bases around the United States. So the man is talking to me and asking completely for anonymity, but with a context of high-end professional work in the context of military contracts. Keep that in mind. And he had also worked in his career, he's now retiring, he had worked for the Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Strategic Planning Office between 1993 and 2005, so he had clearances for that work. And then, in all of that, he came to know a geophysicist who was also working on military contracts, and I learned if the Air Force, for example, wants to build something, they can build above ground, they can build below ground, they need to know if the area where they want to build whatever the facility is, it might be putting computers underground, mm-hmm. missile silos or anything, they want to know if the ground structure is stable. So they hire geophysicists to go out and do all kinds of readings, and that's what this geophysicist, who is the source, did and knows who I'm going to simply call the electronics expert.
Well, they're smart. They'll build nuclear power plants on earthquake fault lines, but they won't build underground facilities.
There are many ironies, George, yeah. in our government. And what was interesting to me is this man said in a deep conversation, the electronics with the geophysicist, that the geophysicist was responding to the electronic man in Utah, where there have been so many boom reports. The electronics expert said to his geophysicist friend, "I am so puzzled. Almost daily now, and this is just recently, I am hearing what sound like thunderous booms in the distance, but then," he said, "he will feel the walls, the doors, the floor, everything rattles." And he's puzzled. How could it sound like distant booming thunder, sort of, and yet he's having physical impact all over his house? And the geophysicist, to the electronic expert's complete shock, said basically that starting in 1998, this is much earlier than our 2011, we'll call it popular, the booms that we've been reporting about the last 2 years, as far back as 1998, on the border of the Yukon and Alaska, that miners were reporting deep underground that they were hearing what sounded like rocks or sand falling through metallic tubes.
How strange.
And, yes, and geophysicists were called in, and they did studies, and they thought it was just some aberration inside the earth causing this sound, and that it was a one-time occurrence. Now, coming to the electronics person talking to him just recently, he said that in this is the geophysicist giving the timeline, that in just the last 2 years since 2011, that, quote, many geologists have noticed almost a 1,000% increase in soil liquefaction, close quote, around the planet. And he goes on to explain this in this way. He, the geophysicist, and colleagues that he knows that are privately, quietly, confidentially studying this, quote, believe something is going on in the inner core of the earth. They don't know if it's a magnetic pole change or restructuring of minerals within the soil of the earth all the way down to the mantle. The mantle covers what is called an outer and inner core of our planet. And then the mantle is the part that is liquid and comes up in volcanoes. And then we're riding on the crust on top of the mantle. So they're talking about noticing something, 1,000% change in what is happening in what they call soil liquefaction, and that it's becoming, this is the geophysicist, it's becoming more frequent, and so has the intensity. We really have no idea what is going on.
And this intensity, planet-wide, Linda?
Yes. This was a surprise to me. When the geophysicist was talking with the electronics expert, he said that this is happening in China, this is happening in Russia, this is happening in countries basically in both hemispheres, but from your and my and American points of view, the only boom phenomena that we have been hearing about has been largely in the United States the last 2 years. And that underscores that in other countries of the planet, if the geophysicist knows this is going on, no one is reporting it. Or if they are trying to report it to authorities, it's not reaching the media in those other countries. It is here because I and a few others are trying to report the facts. And this goes on into something that is so interesting. He said that there may be a link to all of the increasing sinkholes that are also happening around the world.
Good point.
We have been hearing about it in the United States, but there is a photograph that the electronics man sent to me from China, and I believe it's on the web, as one of the, if not the largest, of these so-called sinkholes in the world. It's gigantic, and all of this is part of a pattern that the geophysicist says that there are changes from the inner core, outer core, mantle, and crust because sound frequencies are involved. He emphasized that they are aware of steady infrasound that the human ear cannot hear, but dogs and other animals can, which would explain that man that I interviewed on Coast a couple of months ago, his dogs in the kitchen were the first. They ran into the bedroom like they were scared of something, and he didn't know what was wrong, and he was calling to his dogs, and then, boom, there was a huge boom and a flash of light.
Is the planet cracking up, Linda?
Well, you're asking a very good question, because I ask him, what does the geophysicist say might be the worst case? Booms, flashes, and the booms with the flashes, the flash of light would be a tremendous release of electrostatic energy or static energy that is being built up. And that's when the sound and the light would suddenly be visible and audible to humans while they are also hearing infrasound that is unusual and that they're studying. And he said, the geophysicist said the worst case would be that there are more cracks that could appear in the main continental plate. So instead of having one huge plate more or less from the east coast of Japan down through Indonesia and back up to South America and up to the coastline through California, what would happen if that big plate bulged in the center from some sort of frequency, resonance, change in the speed of the mantle, which they have been recording, the mantle is speeding up, in some relationship to the core, and that might cause cracks in that big plate. That is something that never occurred to me until now. And I am trying to share this tonight for the first time with our Coast audience because I am very interested in whether there is anybody else out there. There's a technician, scientist working for the government, any capacity, who could let me know confidentially whether this information is known to other people. Because suddenly, George, this is the first time I have heard details, and there's much more, about why we would be having booms that would be localized to a house or two. The geophysicist said this has been part of the puzzle, and they think it's because there are sound frequencies. They are going up to the ionosphere, they are bouncing back down, and that would explain why some people experience this from the air above them, and other people are having their literal feet slapped below.
Well, we're going to check in with you, Linda, when we come back about bloodless half-calves and mutilations. It's another strange story coming up, but let's hope this planet doesn't crack up. We'll be back in a moment more with Linda Bolton Howe. And you can watch our television program, Beyond Belief, internet-based, 10 days free. Take advantage of it. Go to GaiamTV.com/George, GaiamTV.com/George. Or even simpler, just go to coasttocoastam.com, click hosts at the top, then the TV button opens up and you can go there. Take advantage of that. And also look at all the incredible self-help and training videos that are all part of that 10 days free. Just go and have some fun. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, so that's an incredible story, of course, of those booms.
Right.
Where does it go next?
Well, I hope to get more information. And if there is some kind of a major change taking place in the earth, is it something that is cyclical? I mean, it might be something that happens every 50,000 years and we didn't know it. Or is there some fundamental change taking place? Like he said, worst case would be that something was changing in the mantle and the speed of the lava, and that if that were the case, it might set up these frequencies that they feel that they have been monitoring and are associating some kind of a vibration at various points, and it's very rapid, which is exactly what people have experienced, very rapid release of energy. And from their point of view, this is not anything that they had ever heard about before 1998, and especially from 2011 on. So here we sit with silence on the part of agencies. No one has heard anything from Homeland Security or FEMA or Department of Defense or anyone. And when I ask him, well, why isn't the government just telling us about what is being observed? He said, panic. They don't want people to panic. And I said, well, maybe there's nothing to panic about, but if we all understood what scientists were studying, at least we wouldn't be broadsided with some shock. It could be something that is natural to the planet, and we need to all know about it so people aren't alarmed when they hear some boom. And if it is something that is natural to the interior process of the Earth, how fascinating that it would be happening at this juncture in the 21st century that nobody knew about before.
Indeed. Now, the latest you looked at, you also looked at some stories about bloodless excisions of calves and mutilated animals. What's going on?
Well, just in the last 3 months, I have reported about mutilations in Whidbey Island, in Dundee, Oregon. They continue to this day. They've been going on since at least the early 60s, perhaps all the way back to the beginning of the 20th century. I had talked with a producer at the BBC in London back in 1979 in September when I had first started investigating animal mutilations because they were happening all over the state of Colorado, and I was director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver. And so I produced, wrote, direct, and edited documentaries about things in science and environment and medicine. And I was approaching this subject as a TV producer and a reporter who wanted to get to the bottom of why are all these animals found with a sort of the same pattern of excisions and no blood?
There is no blood
on the classic excisions, and even making it more strange,
baffling,
there are no tracks around the animal, not even the animal's own tracks. So starting there is why I decided I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And it was a little bit like Alice in Wonderland going to the mirror. I was not prepared for the very first meeting with Sheriff Tex Graves up in Logan County, Colorado. He had retired, and he knew my work at the station, and he was prepared to talk with me very honestly. And he brought out a bunch of Polaroid photos that he himself had taken at animal mutilations since the beginning of the 70s. And I am looking at animals in which I'm not looking at blood, I'm looking at these similar excisions. And there was one particular series that he had taken, and it was a 1,700, 1,800 pound male. I think it was a steer. It's a pretty big animal. And it had horns that had been put right into the earth. And he said, how would this happen unless this animal were either dropped or lowered to the ground to insert the horns into the ground? That's number one. Then he showed me a steer that walking toward it, as the rancher had and then he had in law enforcement, the steer was on powder ground. And in Colorado and a lot of these places, I've been on this. You might as well be walking on face powder, like from the old days when people would powder their faces. Yeah. It is that dry. There's nothing growing. So here is this large animal lying with its, remember it was on its right side, and the hooves were perfectly together in the front legs and the back legs. And there was an 8-inch hole. Its head was down in a hole. There was nothing else around in the powder. You couldn't even see any marks where those hooves were together. And he said, Linda, something had to have the ability to control the muscles and the nervous system of this animal and left its head alone. And the head dug the hole while the entire rest of the body was there and didn't move 1/8 of an inch.
And something is picking up these animals, dropping them off.
Well, now you get to the ranchers who have talked to me and reported that they themselves have seen beams come down in pastures. These are ranchers who will not go, will not go on television, who will not go in front of a camera, but I've talked to about a dozen, and they have seen beams come down out of something in the sky. They have either seen an animal rise in a beam, or they have seen an animal come down in a beam, and when it gets to the ground, it is the same ear, eye, tongue, jaw, flesh, genitals, and rectum cord out with no blood. And this would explain, George, why there are no tracks around the animals, including the animal's own tracks. If they are lowered, dead, and mutilated to the ground, then they didn't walk to the site where they are found. And then there are the cases where I've worked with people and biophysicists on soil compression tests. There have been many of these animals have been found in craters. And when you work backwards from the physics of the weight of the animal and how deep they are in a crater, you come to a spot 200 feet in the air that the animal had to have been dropped in its dead weight to the ground. But probably some of the hardest physical evidence that a lot of people don't understand, and I get a lot of emails asking me questions about this. They hear that the animals are supposed to be bloodless, and they assume that there's no blood anywhere in the animal. And that's not precisely true. We have found that there is blood in the capillaries, but here is the very interesting work that I have done with John Altshuler, MD, a pathologist and hematologist who has passed on, but we were able to work together for about 6 years closely. And he would examine tissue. I would go out into the field. I have personally walked with formalin-filled plastic and scissors and scalpels and collection bags for soil and grass. And I have collected mutilator tissue from so many animals and then had my own cut, whether it was a scalpel or a scissors, so there was a baseline comparison. And he would get it back to the lab and have the tissues prepared. And one day he called me and he said, I am very puzzled about what the cutting instrument might be on these animals. Because he said, we're a carbon-based life form, all animal life on the planet, humans, cows, goats, and all. And if you take high heat, let's say from what most people assume, maybe lasers were doing these excisions. A laser will always leave carbon residue at the excision where there is a cut. It has to do with being a carbon-based life form and interaction with heat, and it looks sort of like you kind of sprinkled pepper on the excision, but we're looking at it through a microscope. And on the mutilator's cut, you don't find the black carbon residue. But we went out and we just, for reality's sake and looking at baseline of what happens in gynecological surgery with lasers and what happens in horses, lots of laser surgery in horses. And all of those slides on the microscope would show that black pepper. So Dr. Altshuler was the very first one to point out hard physical evidence and the difference between the mutilator's cut and the, we'll call it typical laser surgery, and said, we're not in the same ballpark here, and I don't have an idea what the cutting instrument is. Is it with sound? Is it with light? What is it? Because it's not a typical laser. And then when you go on from that hard data, you come to the cuts themselves, in which going far back into the 1970s and many times since, we will find in certain parts of the animal, usually around the jaw area, that you will see something that looks like a pinking shear was taken. Perfect. There's no blood, there's no fluid, the skin, everything in the hide is perfect and dry, but it looks like you took pinking shears and cut. What could make that kind of an incision? And in my work in the two books, An Alien Harvest and Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 1, in which I did a lot about my own investigations of the animal mutilations, there was an Oregon Diagnostic Veterinarian Laboratory report on one of these serrated or pinking shear-like excisions that said this was caused by high heat, that it is written in the diagnostic report. But the cause of the heat and the excision is unknown. Those words are in that laboratory report that goes back into the early 1990s. And over the years, a lot of people ask me, well, weren't the mutilations just in the 1960s and 70s? No. Every single year since I started investigating in 1979, there have been multiple mutilations, and add on to that is the mystery of the half cats. When I first read the story about half cats, it was in the New York Times. It was about half cats being found in Tustin, California, and in Toronto, Canada, and it was in the 80s. And I remember reading that, wondering at the time, could this possibly have any link to the larger animal mutilations? Well, one day, I got a call that there had been a series of half-cat mutilations up in Vancouver, British Columbia. In fact, I think there were 35 or 37 that had been investigated. And there had been necropsies.
That's huge.
It is. It's a lot. And Dr. Altshuler made a contact with the head of the animal cruelty, I think it was their animal protection agency there, and said, is there any way that you could get me, whether it's the front half or the back half of a cat, so that I can do the examination that we've been doing here on larger animals with photomicrographs, doing analysis, looking at collagen, looking at hemoglobin, looking at all kinds of physical aspects in which heat, the cooking has definitely been confirmed, and they sent the front half of a beautiful Russian gray Himalayan cat that had been cut precisely through the abdomen. This is going through the horizontal so that you would have the back half of the cat was missing, the front half is there, and that usually is the way it is. The front half is usually what is there. And when Dr. Altshuler received it, and he did the excision, and he showed me under the microscope, we were in the same area where there's high heat, and the high heat is in the collagen and the hemoglobin that are cooked, and no carbon residue. And he looked at me, I still can remember him looking at me and saying, do you suppose the same instrument, the same perpetrators are doing the half cat that are doing the cattle and the horses and the pigs and the goats and so forth? I don't have a proven answer to that, but over the years, what I have begun to see as a pattern, if something happens, let's say that there are helicopters or there's a military drill or there's something involving the military, it seems to me that half cats suddenly are reported in areas. And I've often wondered, could it be some non-human retaliation to something that our government does, and they know how we love our cats and our dogs, and that there is something almost personal in leaving the half cats. And I, again, that is only a sense, having dealt with this for so long, if there is motive behind the half cats and the mutilations, the large animals, even people in government that I've talked to, they acknowledge, yes, as sheriffs have always said to me, the creatures from outer space are the perpetrators of animal mutilations. The half cats, some people say, yes, it's in that same category. Others say they don't know. They're not sure. But the half cats have been going on literally throughout all of North America, England, Europe, and they've been reported in sometimes in Australia. So this, again, is a global phenomena that is so repulsive to us humans that I can't help but wonder, is that part of the purpose of doing it this way? The cattle, maybe it is a genetic harvest to make drones or make androids or something. The half cat, it just seems too terrible.
It's an amazing story, Linda.
Yeah. And it goes on and on, George. It's been going on. The BBC producer told me that they had had a journal that had a story, and I believe the date was 1911, and that 104 white-haired sheep had been found on an Australian billabong, ear missing, eye missing, tongue, jaw flesh, genitals, rectum cored out, that there wasn't a drop of blood on any of the 104, that's the most I've ever heard, 104 animals, and that the kicker was there was not a single track around them. That would mean, if this is true, all of those animals might have been put down at one time in one of these beams. Now, that's, again, speculation. But there is a pattern here, and when you combine the pattern with the few eyewitnesses that have talked to me confidentially about seeing the beams come down in their pastures, seeing animals come down or go up, suddenly you have a technology that is somehow neutralizing gravity in these beams, and it explains how these animals, whether it's a single animal or more, could be put down with not a single track around the mutilated body.
Go figure. I mean, what do you assume? What can you assume? Who knows?
Well, you know, Jim Sparks, who I've always respected, is an abductee who has called it like it is and has never made a 6-inch fish into something larger. He said, from his point of view of what he was exposed to, and he thinks mostly conscious, the animal mutilations are providing genetic material for some need, just as the collection of human sperm and eggs are providing, let's say, the possible building of other bodies or containers.
That's true.
And that means that we are like a supermarket.
Like mass production. Linda, let's wrap that up when we come back, and then we'll get into your next story for the full hour on light phenomena. That's next.